I recall correctly, our sage's sole comment, our sole halachot about Talmud about Hanukkah is roughly starts with the statement, "My Hanukkah." What the heck is Hanukkah? Which implies that it was an evolving process at that era, some 1800, 1600 years ago. Not long ago, maybe 10 plus years ago, it was a question on probably Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, one of those shows. What does Hanukkah mean? If I recall correctly, the answer was rededication. But I was thinking about the etymology of the word, so it's chet nun kaf, probably. The gentleman we call Enoch, who is Chanoch, which is one of my children's middle Hebrew names, is probably connected to that. Elsewhere, sages say it's connected to chinuch, which is education or initiation. Not so clear. And frankly, for me, is it the hardest? It's one of the hardest holidays for me. It's the post-biblical holidays, the post-Torahitic at the very least, if we think of Purim as not as biblical, but not Torahitic, and Hanukkah written in Greek, the Maccabees are written in Greek, the celebration is much later. It's problematic not just because it's slight as a holiday, it's really, to my mind, there's candles, songs, and fried foods. But also problematic in its nature. So there are new studies, there's a new book, if I could recall the name of it, that aims to demonstrate that the American Revolutionary War was also a civil war. That there were entire battles of the American Revolutionary War without any British or other foreign troops that were fought exclusively between loyalists to the crown and new nationalists. And I think longer than recently, scholars have thought about that with Hanukkah, that it wasn't just a revolt against Seleucid Greeks, but it was a purge of different peoples in the Jewish community that led to, in some of our sages' Talmudic minds, an unfortunate and usurpation of the priesthood by the Hasmoneans. A little bit of be that as it may, that's just context. It's always awkward, as we did, to say Hallel, for a political event. There's even a modern debate over whether we should say Hallel for Yom HaAtzma'ut, the Israel Independence Day. Are we deifying a civic event? And it's possible, as many of our Christian contemporaries do, to see God's hand in the small touch of history. That's a legitimate way to understand. You know, they wouldn't say that I was interviewed to be a rabbi. They said that we were discerning and I was following my calling. It's really, in some ways, just the flip side to the same coin. So again, the many problematics of Hanukkah, not least of which is what does the word mean? So I want to share with you, I want to start from the blessing that we read as an insertion to Amidah. We read it, interestingly, in the Modim section, the thanksgiving section or acknowledgement of God's goodness. And it's a very pretty prayer. I actually think it's incredibly well written. So, like at Purim, we say Al Hanisim ba'ala Purkan ba'ala Gvurot ba'ala Tshuot ba'ala Niflaot shasita lavotenu ba'yamim ahem bizman hazeh. For all the miracles and wild wonders, I'm translating roughly, that you did for our ancestors in such ancient days. That's the beginning for Purim and for Hanukkah both. So, and then in each holiday you have a specific section that talks about the specific events, the historic events, or pseudo-historic, quasi-historic. B'mei Matityahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, in the days of Matityahu, I'm not going to translate every word, just Matthew, who was Hasmonean, Hoshmoni Yavanav, She'amda Malchut Yavan Harasha al Amcha Beit Yisrael, that the wicked empire of Greece stood against your people Israel. Lehashkicham Torechecha Lehaviram Mechukei Retzonecha Ve'ata Barachmecha Rabim Amad Alehem Be'etzaratam. They caused us, or they would have caused us, to forget our Torah and God's law, and you and your mercy stood us up against them. And this is where I think it's really poetic. Just listen more than translate. Ravta et rivam, danta et dinam, nakamta et nekamatam, masarta giburim biad chalashim. You ravta et rivam. So it's, I can't think of a good way to, you disputed their dispute, you judged their judgments, you brought vengeance upon their vengeance, you avenged their vengeance. They're all sort of verbs and nouns that have parallel language, I think, which is very pretty. And then it's this long string of catalog of deliverances. So masarta, you wrapped up, you entrusted, or you delivered. Giburim biyad chalashim, you delivered the strong into the weak. It's a little bit like the Sermon on the Mount, actually. Rabim biyad ma'atim, the many into the hands of the few. Tameim biyad tarim, the impure into the hands of the pure. Rishaim biyad tzadikim, the wicked in the hands of the righteous. Zaydim biyad oskei Torah, the apostates or the heretics in the hands of Torah doers. So that's probably not about Greeks, that's probably about Jews, right? You made your name great in the world. You did one of the greatest victories, deliverances since this up to this day. And then they came, so this connects the historic events with the miraculous event of the oil of the menorah. So they came in, after all that was done, after God delivered the Greeks into our hands, so to speak, we were able to renew the temple, which meant lighting the candles and cleaning the courtyards and so renewing the temple itself. I just think it's a really, liturgically, I find it to be a very sort of rhythmic and fun to say prayer. It's got a lot of nice parallelisms, and it's just kind of trips off the tongue once you know it well enough. So that aside, so you've got this sort of problematics coupled with great liturgical memory. Jack Love, not here, just sent me his doctorate, which is on Passover as the tension between memory and history. It is a memory of a history, or a history of a memory, I think is what he calls it. And a little bit of that is occurring in the Hanukkah story, somewhat of which is why we have the debate over which way to light the candles. This is very interesting, someone pointed out to me. At the time of the Mishnah, when they're debating how we light the Hanukkah candles, they're farther from the event of Hanukkah than we are from the events of the Shoah, the Holocaust of World War II. And you can understand that we are in the process of codifying a grieving process, a ritual, a liturgy around the Shoah. They were still in process of codifying how to commemorate the Hanukkah. It's a historical side note. So what are the lessons of Hanukkah? And I may, if time permitting, connect them to the lessons of the parasha. Hard to say. I mean, I've got a few ideas. So if you look at that liturgy, the liturgy is really about the limits of human power. Just as said elsewhere, Sinai was not a superb mountain. It was not unusually large or even particularly small. It was sort of, is that Goldilocks and Three Bears? Just right in the middle. And it was only through God's grace that Sinai became the Mount of Epiphany, of Revelation. So too, I think implied in that liturgy and elsewhere is, we didn't do anything to deserve this miraculous redemption. Whether it was God's divine hand and providence or just grace or something simple as luck, it was not on us. We were few, the Romans were mighty, the Greeks were mighty, we were attempting to be righteous, they were attempting to pervert our cause, so to speak. Again, this is story, not history, although in the ancient world there wasn't much of a line between story and history. So, point being, not our fault that we won, that there is a sense of God's grace in the world, if not providence. And then our sages, more in the past centuries, in the 17th and later, talk about the connection, I think, very interestingly, between the Chanukiah and the menorah. So a menorah is a lampstand or a candelabrum. That's how you would probably translate it. It's a lampstand for an oil-based lamp. No, we don't have one here, exactly. So my sons were asking me, what's the difference? And I tried to explain the logic statement. Every Chanukiah is a menorah, not every menorah is a Chanukiah. So every Chanukiah is a kind of lampstand, but not every lampstand is suitable for Hanukkah. And it's precisely in this case because it has more lights than a weekday menorah, 7 relative to 9. Which somehow in my mind actually makes it defective. You know, if 7 is a sacred number because it's prime and because it doesn't fit in with many other numbers and because it's understood in many cultures throughout the world to be a auspicious number. Nine is not much of anything, right? And it's irregular for a holiday to be 8 days long. We accept that in the diaspora, but traditional holidays are 7 days long. So it's this very queer experience that the Hanukkah and the holiday are the wrong size. So what our sages in the past century suggest is it's a memory, it's a zecher of the menorah. The Hanukkah is nice, but what it really points to is something much deeper, the lost temple, the temple that was restored, the temple that was lost again, and the temple that metaphorically or literally will one day be restored to us. It's a symbol of pointing both backwards and forwards, that as light illumines the darkness, so too redemption is somewhere on the horizon. And I think most obviously the things these, from a naturalistic perspective, the things that Hanukkah and Christmas and Kwanzaa share is the winter solstice. During the darkest times of the year, physically dark, emotionally inauspicious, emotionally fearful, even replete with danger. I mean, darkness is a time for marauders and animals, right? We light candles to cast aside the darkness, to make it through that solstice period, even if we didn't know exactly which day the solstice was. We orient ourselves such that light is burgeoning in the time of greatest darkness during the year. But I find like something clicked with me this year about what the holiday is really about, or what the holiday is about to me today and maybe most of all along. So what is the mitzvah of Hanukkah and the mitzvah of the Chanukiah? Does anyone know what it's called? Where do you put your Shabbat candles? No, your Shabbat candles, sorry, trick question. What? Ideally on the dinner table where you enjoy them. Where do you put your Hanukkah candles? Why? It's called Pirsume Nisa, so everyone can see them. To promote or to publicize the miracle. Yeah, I think I'm going to leave this week's Parsha. I had another half of the sermon about the Parsha, but I want to end with just Hanukkah. So I was at Hanukkah in the square, the Chabad event downtown, which is excellent. And our mayor, Ken Cannon, was there on her first day on the job. It was a very sweet night. The kids were singing the Hanukkah songs in Yiddish, Hebrew, and English. And it was earlier that day. This is one of those places where I think Chabad is right. Not that I think they're wrong about a lot of things. It's clear to me that they're the most right by having these, one might say, gaudy, giant menorahs. Pirsume Nisa, to me, is about living Jewishly out loud. Right? And I think the experience of this community, so we built this sanctuary, which had very few, we built this congregation with not many exterior windows. I don't know if this was the reason, but to me it suggested a community in the 60s that wasn't living Jewishly out loud. It was keeping to itself, much as the Latino community in Knoxville is doing now. And Pirsume Nisa is a counterpoint to say, no, you have to show people that you're Jewish. Not necessarily wear a kippah in public, although that's one way, but at least 8 days a year, announce to your neighbors who you are and be proud of it. Not proud, and this is where I would have gone in relation to the Parsha, not proud in a sort of a chauvinistic or a jingoistic or a way that is hubris, but authentically confident that it's important to be Jewish, that it's important to be Jewish in a community of other communities, even if it's sometimes fearful, and that it's important for your neighbors to know that were they to say something anti-Semitic, their neighbor is a Jew. The person with whom their children play, the person who attends to them at the hospital, the person who does their taxes is a Jew. And so just keeping that in the public consciousness, I think, is a bit of what Pirsume Nisa is. The counterpoint might be, well, it happens in Israeli apartment complexes too, in Jerusalem. People put them in their doorway in the Israeli apartment complex for the other Jews who walk up the stairs. Yes, and. I think that's a beautiful message. It's a sort of a scary message, a somewhat subversive message, but an important one for us. That throughout the generations of Marranos in Spain and Portugal, the generations under the Nazis, the generations elsewhere where Judaism was something you kept to yourself, even in 1960s Georgia, we have to live out loud at least some of the time.